Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward with each new idea, innovation, and partnership. We're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast. We are back for another episode. This one is a really exciting one. I'm sitting down with my good friend, Ashley Easter from Courage 365, a nonprofit that helps survivors of abuse. And it's also a nonprofit that I am honored to be a board member of. And we're going to have a really great conversation about building healthy community. But first, I want to just cover a couple quick things that have been popping up surrounding the podcast and the show and just do a little bit of housekeeping here. First, I want to address the elephant in the room, or I should say the elephant and donkey in the room, because I know there's been some people who are not thrilled about the fact that there's been some episodes that are focused on the subject of politics. And look, I 100% understand that, and I understand why political discourse is not something everyone wants to experience. But I wanted to create those episodes because I think they're really helpful to people who are trying to navigate the intersection between, you know, political discourse that can get really awful wherever you're having it, but particularly in the United States for most of the listeners. And religious trauma, because I think those two things have a lot of links. There's a lot of politicized teaching within religious environments like the IFB. And so my goal is not to convert people to any specific political party, but to encourage kind of really healthy dialogue. And so don't worry if you don't like political discourse in any form. You don't want to hear the words politics. I don't blame you. There's only a couple episodes in the tank that are going to be covering that. So we had a really great conversation with Dr. Laura Anderson that's available now. I have an upcoming interview with Dr. David Gushy that is going to be dropping in the next couple weeks, I believe March 10th. And then I have one with Scott M. Coley. So those are the next two that are going to be coming up regarding politics. And again, if you aren't a fan of those, I 100% understand it. I hear you. But I've had enough people express interest. I've had enough people privately reach out on these topics that I thought it'd be really relevant. So yeah, I'm going to keep doing them. So brave the storm, but it shouldn't be too many more before we're back in the swing of things normally. And you can set politics aside outside this show. So, yeah, I think it'd be really great. And also, too, I mean, the conversations I'm having regarding politics, deconstruction, like some of those are just conversations I really want to have. And, you know, I create this show for those that are listening, but I also create it for myself. And as I'm growing and learning and developing and examining my own worldview and my own beliefs about things, to have access to talk to some of these authors and thought leaders and influencers and religious thinkers and political, you know, critics. And it's been really fascinating for me. And, you know, I always try to toe that balance and keep in mind that some people don't listen to the show for me at all, which is totally fine. But also, I know there's some people who really enjoy seeing me kind of examine this stuff in real time over the last couple of years, now going into 4 years of the show. So anyway, yeah, I just want to address that. I know that not every single episode of the last almost 300 episodes of Preacher Boys is going to be for everybody. And I understand and acknowledge that, but also want to make sure that I'm covering everything that seems relevant or everything that you know, even I'm personally examining on my own journey of leaving a high control religious group. So that's that for the political themed episodes. The next thing I wanted to just cover really quickly was I'm going to be participating this Friday. So Friday, February 23rd, I'm going to be participating in a live Q&A with the Vashti Initiative. It's going to be moderated by Evan Jones, who is a big part of the organization over there. And it's going to be featuring me and my friend Kathy Durbin. Both of us, of course, were featured in the documentary that hit HBO and Investigation Discovery called Let Us Pray, A Ministry of Scandal. So if you haven't watched it, now's probably a good time. And be sure to visit the link in the show notes of this episode to go tune in to that Q&A that's happening February 23rd. 2024 with the Vashti Initiative. It's starting right at 5 Pacific Standard Time and 8 Eastern Time. So it's a really convenient time for anybody to be able to tune in. It's not too late, not too early. And hopefully we'll have a good turnout to that. So be sure to tune in to Let Us Pray, a survivor forum that's being hosted by the Vashti Initiative, February 23rd. 2024. And then lastly, before I get into today's topic with Ashley Easter, my special guest, I do want to address a case that I know many people have been following since it first dropped at the end of last year. And that was the arrest of Nick Corll. Nick was a former teacher, vice principal, and athletic director at Calvary Christian School in Banning, California, which is my alma mater, for those of you that don't know. And so I've obviously been following this case pretty closely. And he was arrested and charged at the end of last year. And he was finally sentenced February 15th. He took a plea deal last month. And I'll just read the article from Patch so you can kind of know exactly what's happening there. I'll link to it in the show notes of this episode. So if you want to read through it yourself. But it says, a former teacher at a Christian school in Banning who had inappropriate contact with a female student was sentenced Thursday to 3 months in jail and 3 years felony probation, as well as ordered to register as a sex offender. Nicholas Garrett Corll, 26, of Banning, pleaded guilty last month to attempted sexual intercourse with a minor and molestation of a child under 18 years old under a plea agreement with the Riverside County District Attorney's Office. In exchange for his admissions, prosecutors dropped a related felony charge. Superior Court Judge Jorge Hernandez certified the terms of the plea deal and imposed the sentence stipulated by the prosecution and defense. In addition to 3 months in custody, the judge ordered Corll to spend an additional 90 days in a sheriff's work release program, during which time he'll have to be gainfully employed or attend school. The plea bargain requires the defendant to register as a sex offender under Penal Code Section 290 as part of his probation, and the registration bars him from having any contact with a juvenile outside of his family. The terms specify that Corll cannot be, quote, within 100 yards of where minors congregate, including but not limited to schools, yards, parks, amusement parks, concerts, playgrounds, swimming pools, and arcades, end quote. He must also keep law enforcement informed of where he's residing. According to a Banning Police Department arrest warrant affidavit, Corll was on the faculty of Calvary Christian School in Banning. The declaration said that he was spotted with a 15-year-old girl whose identity was not disclosed in a storage room on the campus last September 12th. A witness saw the student on his lap face-to-face in a dark room while classes were underway, police said. The school is part of Mountain Avenue Baptist Church, which is next door. A church employee went to the police station that day and reported criminal acts against a child that occurred on church property, according to the affidavit. The ensuing investigation culminated in the defendant's arrest hours later at the Vista Serena condominium complex. Coral was dismissed from his position. He had no documented prior felony convictions in Riverside County. So anyway, that's the update on Nick there. It's really simple. I could have predicted really the outcome of this. I figured it would be 2 to 3 months in jail time, some probation. I honestly am very surprised he had to register as a sex offender, just given similar cases. But I'm glad that he did. Of course, I wish it was more time. But I'm glad that he actually was given some time and is forced to register as a sex offender. So I want to give that update for anybody who's been wondering. I know I get DMs about this case specifically fairly frequently, so I wanted to address that here on the show. Well, now let's get into today's topic. We're talking all about building healthy community. I'm sitting here with my good friend, Ashley Easter. She is the founder and director of Courage 365, a nonprofit committed to helping survivors of abuse, both from religious backgrounds and just any background in general. So they help victims of abuse in LGBTQ communities, in domestic violence situations. It's a really fantastic organization that I'm honored to be a part of as a board member, and really excited to be bringing these conversations with Ashley out to you every single month. I don't know which day I'll set as like the Courage 365 day, but at least once a month, you're going to be hearing a Q&A with Ashley and me just discussing some of these topics that are really pressing for survivors, just really resource heavy, really helpful topics that are going to encourage some people who need it. And so, enjoy this conversation. Be sure to visit courage365.org to find out more about this incredible organization. But for now, let's get into my conversation with Ashley Easter. I'm going to get you back into today's episode in just a moment, but first I want to thank the sponsor that is making today's episode possible, and that sponsor is Factor. Factor creates no prep, no mess meals. You can meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, no matter how many podcasts you're recording, going up and down the stairs, trying to take meetings, whatever you're doing, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I can say this from experience. They were kind enough to send me a couple of meals for this week, and I enjoyed one just shortly before reading this ad, and it is amazing. And with 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert and stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. And these aren't meals that skimp on quality either. You've got things like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon, and so much more. So if you want to try it, go head over to factormeals.com/preacherboys50 and use code preacherboys50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code PreacherBoys50 at factormeals.com/PreacherBoys50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Go check out Factor, and now check out the rest of this episode.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this one in particular because I know that building community is one of the hardest things when you leave, whether it's an abusive relationship, whether it's leaving a religious community, finding people that you can trust and finding people that understand kind of where you're at in your journey is really, really difficult. And so I think it's a good time to kind of talk about building that support structure around you. So first and foremost, how does being part of a supportive community contribute to the healing journey of survivors?
Well, I think evolutionarily speaking, humans have evolved to be in tribes. And whether you go all the way back before we had the humans of today, there was always these tribal communities, and it allowed people to feel safe. It allowed people to feel connection, and there were a lot of shared resources. Now, back in the day, it was, a lot of physically shared resources like food and water and berries and all the things that they had. But I think as humans, we really are hardwired to be in community of some sort. And so when I look at the importance and the benefits of community, I just see that we were usually harmed in a community sense, even if it was just by one person. There's often a community response that's often negative. And so, for us to heal the wounds of what's happened in community, feeling safe community to kind of replace those memories and fulfill the loss of community that was taken away from us during the abuse, I find that that's just a very important step in kind of having this ground level, healing for ourselves.
You mentioned safe community, and I know for especially people listening to my podcast, there's a lack of trust in yourself to identify what is a safe community. So, I know there's a lot of different caveats and things to look out for, but if you could say like two or three things that you try to look for when determining the safety of a group, so you're not jumping from one toxic group to another.
Right. So when you're in a toxic group, they continually try to get you to doubt yourself, to doubt your gut, to look at everybody else and what they're saying about what reality is, instead of looking inside and seeing what you're feeling, what you're picking up, and noticing what your body's reacting to. And so I would encourage people that you're not the same person today as you were when you're in that group. You no longer have to rely on other people to tell you what to think, do, and believe. You don't have to rely on other people to tell you their version of what safe or good community is, because sometimes that's warped, as we've seen in many faith communities. So, first, I would just say pay attention to what's going on in your body. If you are meeting a new person or going into a new group, you don't have to trust right away. In fact, I would say it's very important to be cautious. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go in completely skeptical and like a chip on your shoulder, that type of thing. But move in slowly. And as you're interacting with people, as you're interacting with a group, see how it's setting with you. Does this feel uncomfortable? Does this feel like boundaries are being crossed? Does this feel like there's something here that makes you feel safe? So I think the first thing I would do is just really pay attention to your body and how it's reacting, because so many times that's been like bred out of us in these toxic cultures. The other thing I would say is there are some clear markers of healthy communities, and that is really you being able to leave the group at any time without punishment, you being able to ask questions and get transparent answers. In groups like this, you're not going to be forced to become exactly like carbon copies of everybody else in the group. There's going to be an encouragement for people to think differently, and as long as there's kind discourse, disagreement is fine. So I would look for those sorts of things. But then just at the end of the day, I think some of it's going to take a little bit of time, because maybe you initially go into a group or meet a new person and you don't have any red flags come up. But as you get deeper into the group, don't completely let your guard down. Because what I have seen with some survivors is they're so desperate for community. And I get it, because I've been there, that once they kind of get through the first little bit of time, then they drop all boundaries and guardrails. And then they just go into full-fledged trust. Like a safe community and a safe way of looking at life is just, I am going to see what feels safe and right for my body right now. And keep reevaluating that. Keep reevaluating that and allow yourself to always kind of have that in the back of your mind that if things start to feel off, you don't owe it to the group to stay. And if they start treating you like you do owe it to the group to stay, then that's a problem. That's a red flag.
I think any group that offers itself up as like the only solution, and I see this with even advocacy groups where, you know, we have this proven method to heal you from this thing, or we are the safest community, or we are this thing. And I think, like you said, there's a freedom to leave and be able to explore different environments. And you know, and that doesn't always mean that a group necessarily became unsafe, but maybe it didn't become the thing that was most beneficial to you at this stage. And, you know, I tell people that with my group. My group is, you know, very focused on people who are trying to reconcile the weight of religious trauma and abuse. And, you know, every group, because of who I am, because of who members are that have joined, there's different tones in different groups. And so I've told people, like, it doesn't have to be mine. It can be so-and-so's. It could be a group that's focused more on deconstruction. It could be a group that's focused more on sexual abuse without the religious angle to it. And I think having that freedom is a good sign. And I think it's important, like, even in one-to-one relationships, like, we outgrow relationships. So it's okay to let those go. And it doesn't have to be, let's wait until, like, the bridges are burning and the house is falling down. Like, we can we can make those choices in a healthy way.
That reminded me of two things. I feel like it's the same way with therapists. Like, you can find a good quality therapist, and then you can get to a point where you outgrow their expertise, and they might need to refer you to somebody else who can focus on a different area you've uncovered. That doesn't necessarily mean that therapist was bad. It's just that the time expired. And then the other thing kind of going along with that is, I think we've been trained that we need to stay in the same mindset and stay in the same group forever when we talk about religious communities, because they really want to stunt your growth to a point where you don't think beyond, where you're constantly reliant, and they don't want you to be able to fathom, you know, leaving that group and evolving to another one. David Hayward has some really good stuff. If you all follow him, he's the naked pastor. He does all those cool cartoons. But, you know, he was just talking about how a lot of times toxic religious groups try to keep you as a spiritual adolescent, and they don't want you to mature into adulthood and seek other ways of thinking and experiencing life. And so I think that definitely applies to advocacy groups as well. Find what fits for you and don't feel bad if you outgrow something.
One of the things I've looked at personally in relationships and in communities, which are just relationships, kind of exponential relationships where there's more and more connections and second and third connections onward. But one of the things I look at is, I think in fundamentalism, we're trained to look for like-minded people, is like a phrase that gets used a lot. And I found that it is important to get around like-minded people, but that doesn't mean you agree on everything. Yeah. It means you agree with how you get to the things that you believe. And I think one of the keys to look at is, how do you go about? And some people, honestly, I know for a long time, I didn't do this. A lot of people don't know how they come to the conclusions that they hold. Mm-hmm. They don't look at how they receive information, process it, and apply what works for them. And I think if you can find like-minded people in the terms of, hey, we're trying to figure out some of life's biggest questions, whether that's healing, whether that's parenting, growth, religion, how do you go about parsing through that information? And if you can find people who are all kind of parsing through information the proper way and not just using an ideological stance as like a weapon against everybody, I think you're going to find yourself in a lot healthier communities, and your relationships will last even when you're not necessarily in full agreement. Because if you're basing on full agreement, you're never going to last more than maybe a couple weeks or a couple months, or if you're lucky, a couple years in any specific relationship.
That makes sense.
I know community is important to Courage 365 specifically. And I know that there's a lot of resources that have been created to help individuals find community who are probably in the loneliest parts of their journey. How has community become really a core part of Courage 365?
You know, I think that's something that really started the whole organization. So let me give like a quick history of Courage 365. Before we were Courage 365, we actually just had the Courage Conference, and it was an event where people from all across the country, even some other countries, would come together. And as survivors, we talk about these important issues. And I just saw how survivors like myself, we just often feel very isolated, and being able to create intentional spaces for people to come together is just so incredibly healing. So that's sort of how the organization started. And as it's evolved to its own nonprofit, Courage 365, we've continued to have that value. So a couple of things that we do to try to maintain that is, number one, we realize that different people feel comfortable in different types of community. So some people want to be very public. Some people want to be small groups. Some people just want to be in private. All of those things are okay. And so we have kind of three main ways that we do that. So like our more public space is our Facebook group, Courage 365 group. And yes, it is a private group on Facebook, but you're going to meet a lot of people in there. And I've seen, even just this weekend, people sharing stories of what they're going through and their struggles, and other survivors just jumping on the thread and being like, oh my gosh, I've been there. Keep going. I'm going to support you. Here's some tips that I learned. And so some people really thrive in that. So we offer that through the entire year. Then we also have peer support groups, where there's a curriculum people go through with a small group of other survivors, and they're able to talk a little bit more intimately, get to know each other a little bit more intimately, build that trust in a small space, and find a lot of healing through those conversations. And then there's other people who are on our text message list. And every morning, Monday through Friday, we send an empowering text message. And I've had so many people reach out and say, like, this helps me remember that there's a community of survivors behind me. You know, I have to go to court, and I know that when I got this text message, this represents a whole community supporting me. And so I do think that community can look different for different people. And we do our best to try to offer different types, because everybody's at a different place and we want to respect that.
I know that there's the virtual community side, and then you mentioned Courage started really with the one-on-one, you know, physical kind of connection with people. Do you think that it's important to make time for like in-person community beyond virtual community? Do you think that one can supplement the other? Because, you know, there's people listening who might be in a big city where there's lots of opportunity. There might be some that are living down the street from the church they used to go to, and it feels like the whole town goes there. How do you recommend people go about finding in-person interactions with other people who are safe and not, you know, not representative of some of the negative experience they may have had?
Right. So that's going to be a nuanced answer. I know from my personal experience, there's really been two ways that I found in-person community. One was talking about my story in a more public way. And when I did that, people reached out and they're like, oh my gosh, me too. And some could identify with things from my specific community I came from. Other people were from other faith backgrounds and communities, but they were like, I can really connect with this. And we started talking online, which then led to phone calls or Zooms, which then led to, hey, I'm traveling to your state for business. You know, do you want to meet up for coffee? Those kinds of things. So some of it was putting myself out there and being a little bit vulnerable, a lot vulnerable. The other way has just been through social media in general. I have followed certain people in the advocacy world or other survivors. And I've reached out to try to make personal connections online, which has then built into a more trusting relationship where we took the next step to meet in person. I think it's really hard for adults to find friends in any stage of life, even if abuse is not on the table. So I do think you have to be very intentional about finding people that you can meet in person. And I think a lot of that comes through taking that step and saying, hey, I'm going to send this person a Facebook message. And if we chat for a while and we hit it off, let's talk on the phone. I had so many phone calls like the first couple of years where I came out with my story. And it was just, I met my best friend that way. So I do think in-person community is very valuable, but I also understand that there are some people who that just isn't safe, isn't possible for them at the time. And so I just want to like hold space for people who desire that, but it's not practical. And in those cases, I think the online community can be very powerful and supportive.
Just to build on all that. And I'm somebody too, who, you know, my circle has dwindled down quite a bit in terms of like long time relationships. And I think that's a normal experience, unfortunately, leaving kind of fundamentalist religious groups, is that, you know, you go the bridge too far and they feel that they can't be supportive or they change the way that they behave towards you. One of the things that's been helpful to me has been finding relationships that are completely outside of that context. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about survivor communities, and I do think, you know, we were just together in North Carolina with several other people who relate to each other's stories. Mm-hmm. I think there's value in that, but there's also a lot of value in getting around people who don't have any of that context and who are just purely part of the, for lack of a better word, the normal world. Like the people that go, you went to what kind of church? Like the people that can kind of be your outside eyes.
Yes.
And, you know, I have people that I talk to about religious trauma. I have people that I literally talk to about movies, and I talk to about, you know, mainly movies. That's pretty much what I talk about outside religious trauma. And, you know, I like that there's that separation there. I like that there's things that we go to locally where some people don't even know that I was in a documentary about religious abuse. Like, and I like that anonymity, you know? So finding people who maybe don't have the same issues or problems or past trauma, just because it gives you a little bit of time to breathe and not have to be in that mode all the time. And I know it's funny for me to say, and probably funny for someone like you to say, who talks about this all the time, but having that reprieve, I think, is really important too.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And it reminds me of two things. One is, you know, I was homeschooled. I grew up in a very cult-like environment, and there were so many pop culture references that I did not understand. Literally, there was somebody who wrote a reply to me on Twitter a few years back, and I was like, is that from Leviticus? And they were like, no, it's Lord of the Rings. And I was like, I don't know. I wasn't allowed to watch that. And so meeting people kind of outside of your experience allows you to kind of be introduced to other areas of the world. And if you have a safe, supportive friend who maybe you laugh and joke about that together, but they're not like laughing at you, they're laughing with you. Like, it's an opportunity to learn fun things. When I got out, I learned about Taylor Swift, and now one of my best friends, we're like Swifties together, you know, and we like talk about that all the time. And that kind of brings me to my other point, where you have another interest, Eric, which is movies. I think a lot of people who come out of church environments that were very toxic, a lot of times they don't have hobbies because their hobby was door knocking. Their hobby was witnessing. Their hobby was whatever. Yeah. And then there's a lot of time focused on healing trauma. And I think just from a self-care perspective, trying to find something else in your life that interests you. And then, like you were talking about, Eric, trying to find other people who have that same interest. Yeah. That's just a lot of relief, a lot of fun. And I don't know, it's very fulfilling.
The pursuit of figuring out what you like is cool. Yeah, that's putting yourself out there. Is like, I'm trying new things. I'm getting out into new spaces. Like, you know, figuring out that stuff. And again, you can find whole new communities linked into like something that isn't, you know, eternal salvation related. It's not high stakes. It's like, you know, for some, that's literally like, oh, I'm doing, I, this is not for me, but for people that do like, hey, we're going to go get together and play a role-playing game together. And we love board games. Like, I hate board games. That's not how you're going to connect with me. But there's people that are going to connect through that. There's people that are going to connect through, again, film groups, discussion groups. There's people that through book clubs, you know, like there's lots of different paths. I mean, maybe pick a book club that's not going to pick triggering books, but there's lots of different things out there that are really cool. And also, like, what I've noticed too through movies is like just documenting what I'm watching sometimes brings people into conversation. Dominic Benninger, you know, messaged me about different things. Like, it's easy ways to kind of have low stakes conversations with other people. I kind of want to ask this just in terms of people who are listening, who may go, I feel like I have community, but I feel like I'm not necessarily fostering opportunity for others to come into my space. How do you go about making yourself a kind of open and safe space for other people to be reaching out to you? And then beyond that, like, how do you go about being inclusive and welcoming people in? Because I think sometimes we tend to just draw more of ourselves, like, and we don't broaden our horizons to maybe other, you know, types of people and people that may have different experiences or perspectives than us. How do we go about being intentional with including other people into our circles? This doesn't have to be your inner circle, but just your broader circle.
I think before we can even talk about that, we need to address, like, what is the person's values for community? Because they say there's no community like church community, and that's true. And maybe that's good that you can't find that same thing elsewhere. Because I know moving to different places when I was church going, I was able to jump into a new church and immediately have people that I was connected with that wanted to go out to lunch and coffee, and we'd hang out. And there was this instant community, this instant trust, this instant shared vision. But that's also where a lot of love bombing can happen. That's also where a lot of codependence can happen. Yeah. And we can also get this idea that we're supposed to have 500 best friends because everybody's thinking the same. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to step back and realize, like, what is actually realistic for drawing people in? What are my actual goals? Do I really think it's realistic to have 500 best friends? Is that even healthy? probably not. So kind of first, identifying what you mean by, like, bringing people into your community. And then I have, like, different layers of people that I connect with. So I have a very close inner circle that's only a handful of people, probably like 3 or 4 people. Then I have good friends. Then I have friends that I'd probably go out with for coffee with, but, you know, we don't, like, talk all the time. Then there's acquaintance / colleagues. And not every person that you're trying
to
connect.
And you forgot mortal enemies is the
next. Oh, yes, yes.
But that's a different
list. Those are there too, but I try to keep them out of my community. True, true. But I think when you're getting to know people, you don't have to have the expectation that you're immediately trying to draw them into your closest 3 people or even your very best friends. Like, it's okay to start having acquaintances that then maybe work their way in as you build trust and connection. I don't think you're necessarily going out and looking for a best friend. And I think that changes how you approach it. So I would say be friendly and go out of your way to connect with people. If I am out and about and I see somebody who has amazing hair, I'm like, girl, I love your hair. That is so cute. Where'd you get it done? And then immediately there's a conversation. I haven't divulged anything incredibly intimate about myself, but people love to be complimented. They love to be praised for who they are and what they're doing. And so that can be a way to, hey, I admire this person. Let me tell them I admire them. Now, don't go overboard. Be a creeper. But, you know, it's that way. But also online, I will see people that I'm like, well, I really appreciate their advocacy work. Mm-hmm. Or I really appreciate their perspective on this political thing. And I will write them a comment to start with and start a relationship, you know, cut a conversation back and forth. And then maybe from there, I might send them a message sometime and just be like, hey, I really appreciated you writing X, Y, and Z or your perspective on this. I had a quick question for you. What do you think about this? And then you can start a conversation from there. But I would say in the beginning, giving more than what you're taking. And coming from a really genuine place, not to just stack up people in your community or connections, but like actually being interested in people. And there's a difference between there's this expert person that I can't afford to coach me, so I want to ask in the DMs if I can pick their brain. And genuinely meeting somebody that you think you could be mutual friends with and being like, hey, I'm really interested in this. I want to share a part of my life. So I think a lot of it's kind of like getting to know someone on a date. You start at this, kind of friend acquaintance level. You start asking more and more questions, and each step of the way, you're paying attention to like, are they trustworthy? Do they seem honest? Are they mutually reciprocating? Those types of things. But I really think most of the time, you got to make the first move. You got to be the one to reach out. And maybe you'll be lucky and somebody will reach out to you. But if you want to have community, a lot of times you have to be kind of a go-getter and just reach out to other people. Say, hey, you're cool.
Right.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
No, I love the idea of layers, because that's kind of how I've structured things. I really struggled with that for a long time. I would say up till maybe, I think the podcast honestly forced me to do it because I was instantly having a lot of people, which is good, but I had a lot of people reaching out that were like, because they're listening to me every week, were like, we're BFFs. And it was like, I actually had a phone call last night and she's probably listening. And I loved having the conversation, but it was funny because I mentioned that on the call. I said, we were aware of each other, but never had talked before. And we got on the phone. I was like, well, it's good to finally actually get to know you. And I know we didn't really know each other before. And I stopped myself and I was like, well, you actually probably know me a lot more than I know you. And we kind of laughed that like, and she's like, well, listening to podcasts, I literally feel like, oh, you're in my ear all the time. And so I think it's a really interesting, like, just approach to the conversation. But having that layering going like, hey, we have this shared thing. Let's talk about this. And we ended the call going, let's continue this conversation. Like, you're free to keep talking to me. I've had other conversations where you have to put them in a different bucket where it's like, let's not keep talking. And then you have other people that it becomes now we're talking every day. And like, we've become friends through it. We met, just having public dialogue, and then it became, I was staying at your house for like two or 3 days, like it's
my husband was there too.
Your husband was there. That's a weird give context, but it's like one of the things, like now I've met your dog, like we've become friends, And so it's a case by case thing. And I think that's important to recognize, and also recognizing the fact that like, you don't have to be friends with everybody. You don't have to, not everybody is your mission or your specific responsibility. Yeah. I think that's huge. And the last thing I want to just highlight that you said was like, yes, there's the first impressions. And this is something when I interviewed Nadine Macaluso, I asked her about this. And as I was asking it, I answered my own question. And I asked her and I said, so in your book, you talk about how pathological people lay on all of their best face in the first interaction. And I asked her, and I said, how are you supposed to trust your first impression of somebody? And right when I said it and it left my mouth, I was like, you don't. You have multiple impressions and you get to know somebody. And she answered that, trust is earned. And I think that's really important. I think that's at the heart of all of this, is like finding safety by earning the trust, having people earn trust with you, and just allowing new information to influence your decisions moving forward. And I think if people do that and are not rushing, I think they're going to build some really healthy community.
I agree with that. That is so true. One thing that you said that really resonated with me, because I also have people reach out and they tend to think that we're like best friends, even though I've maybe just had a few comments with them because I have a lot of things that I've written, a lot of videos that I've done, those kinds of things. And so I really appreciate you talking about it from the perspective of, you know, they know a lot about us, a lot more about us than we may about them. But I think on the flip side, it's important to talk to people. And I can, you know, even fall into this myself. There are people that I see as influencers, and I devour anything that they put out. And so I feel like we're best friends. But I have to check myself and remind myself that I see what they have curated. I see what they have put out publicly. And even if what they have put out publicly is a true representation of themselves, knowledge does not equal closeness. So just because you know a lot about somebody does not mean that you two are friends, or that the other person is going to be ready to open up to you as quickly as you would want to open up to them. And so even approaching relationships like that with not going overboard and acting like you're BFFs before real tangible trust has been built, versus you just having a lot of knowledge and you personally trust them. It needs to be a mutual thing before it can be a true quality relationship.
Right. Yeah. I think that's where those phone calls and conversations come in. Like, and that's where I think that's where that really, that connection happens. You know, like I said, the person that I was just talking about, like, we hopped on the phone, we were going to talk for like 5 minutes. We ended up talking for like an hour and a half. And like I said, it led to extended conversation, and here's more talking points, and like, stay in touch on this thing. And like, I'm glad that we had the call, and I'm glad that I have a new friend who, you know, where we can talk through that stuff. But I think it's because immediately getting on that conversation, it's like, let's get to actually know each other, and not what do we think we know about each other, you know, from mutuals or from past, you know, seeing on social media, which is not a reliable narrator, you know? And so I think that's huge. As we kind of wrap up this conversation, you mentioned a couple of resources. If you had to pick one resource for people to get plugged into community, what would you recommend them do?
I would say that our Courage 365 Facebook group is really great, because you're able to meet so many different people, and we have like our events and, you know, live Q&As and different trainings in there. But then in that space, we also let you know about other community opportunities like our Courage clubs and text message lists. But I think it's a really great entry point to join the Facebook group. And I would encourage you, if you're looking for a community, to make a post in there. I've had some people come into the group and they're like, I didn't meet anybody. And I understand that we all want to be seen, but in the Facebook world, it's just these little avatars. So if you want to be seen, if you want feedback, maybe post a question or post a thought. And my experience of the group is people are very loving and engaging. And I think that can be a great way to let people know that you're there and you want to connect. And so that's where I would go. And that's how I would approach the group. So you actually can start meeting people.
Well, I have links to all of that in the show notes. Again, none of these are one size fits all solutions, but I think the group is a good place to start because it's a low barrier to entry. It's low stakes. It's, you can literally just go in there and watch for a little bit and see other people interact. I think that's huge, but thank you so much for joining me in this conversation, and I'll see you next month for our next one.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes, and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.